You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
The Clement Maniatella Show.
Let's walk the talk.
So, I want us to talk about the cannabis industry. Remember, during his State of the Nation address this year, President Cyril Ramaphosa said the country will start a formal industrial hemp and cannabis industry, which was welcomed news, right? Because many countries have already advanced and moved with industrialization of cannabis. The demand is great. This is a multi-billion rand industry. It's booming. But unfortunately, in our context, it's being held back by regulation. And this is a sector that has the potential to increase economic growth, to create thousands of jobs. In fact, I think government does estimate that the industry is worth about 28 billion rand in South Africa and could create over 10,000 jobs, really, across the sector. So the sooner we plug in, the better. So I want us to explore the potential that this industry has and whether or not we are paying lip service to unleashing that potential. And I want to know what you think too. So give me a call on 011-883-0702. Do you get a sense that government is serious about unlocking the value of this industry and commercialize it? And what does it need to do? What do you think government needs to do to demonstrate how serious it is to commercialize this industry? I'll take your WhatsApps as well on 072-702-1702. I've invited Garth Strachan, who is a former Trade and Industry Deputy Director General, to join me for this conversation. He recently was appointed as the new policy head to help unlock the country's cannabis industry. He is a consultant, right, and doesn't necessarily speak on behalf of government, but has been brought in to assist. Garth, thank you so much for making time. Thank you for coming in.
It's a pleasure, and thank you for inviting me, Clement.
Yeah, I really appreciate you making time to come into the studio. So you were appointed, was it last month, when you were appointed as a new policy head?
Yes,
it was June.
In June.
Yeah, obviously it's still early days, but what have you been able to do so far?
I think we need to develop a coherent policy as the basis for securing policy coherence and alignment across government departments. Secondly, my own view, and this is subject to government agreement, is that we need a single or hemp and cannabis for all purposes piece of legislation, rather than trying to do this with very disparate, different pieces of legislation. And then we need an evidence base which gives us a better understanding of the global market, the domestic market, across industrial uses, medicinal, pharmaceutical, wellness, and all the other demand pillars for hemp and cannabis. And then I think we need some interim measures. South Africa hasn't done very well in relation to sunrise sectors. Let me give you an example. We tried to start a biofuel sector, a local manufacturing for renewable energy, wind and power, and an upstream oil and gas equipment sector. And we haven't done very well with nascent or sunrise sectors. So we need some very careful planning with some interim measures, and the interim measures have to be carefully calibrated. Let me give you an example. SAPRA has issued 150 licenses for cannabis cultivation, and that may have had very unintended consequences. Without a demand analysis, those companies may be in a situation where they've become stranded. They don't have demand for their product. Some of them are exporting product, but there is anecdotal evidence that the product has been dumped in some cases on the illicit market, with the negative unintended consequence of lowering prices, oversupply, and impacting black, small-scale, traditional, indigenous knowledge growers. And that sector has to be central, as the president has said, to our plans for a sustainable hemp and cannabis industry.
And we're going to talk more about just the support that is being given to those small-scale farmers, but also how we make sure that in in us making sure there are regulations in place, how do we make sure that that doesn't then affect those small-scale farmers who already are growing this plant? I want to quickly clarify something, Garth. In your role as the policy head, you know, often we talk about this duplication of responsibilities. I know that Operation Vulindlela, which you are part of, is not an implementing structure, right? But the lead department responsible for cannabis master plan remains the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. So where do you, as the head of policy, come in? Do you then work with the department to make sure that they speed up the implementation of the cannabis master plan? I'm just trying to understand, how do you make sure you don't duplicate responsibilities?
No, absolutely. It's an incredibly important question. I see the role as one of orchestration. The Department of Land, of Rural Development and Agriculture has to be responsible for primary production. The Department of Trade, Industry and Competition is responsible for upstream of the farm gate, all the equipment, and downstream of the farm gate into processing and manufacturing. But it's complicated. With respect to medicinal uses, there obviously has to be a regime of clinical testing, so the Department of Health has to be involved, SAPRA has to be involved, the Department of Justice has to be involved, because we can't open a new sector without also taking into account issues of public health and safety. And unfortunately, sometimes cannabis consumption has been associated with other drugs and criminal activities. So there are also justice and policing issues involved. So it's a complex mix of the necessity of getting intra-governmental coherence and alignment, unblocking the blockages to investment and support for black small-scale farmers. And it requires a competitive strategy. South Africa's land race seeds, for example, or stock, these are competitive capabilities which we don't, which we can't lose. At the moment, the licensing requires the importation of seeds. We should be developing a seed bank and a method of distributing seeds, as has been done, for example, in Thailand. And we've got to look very carefully at how we support black small-scale farmers. These are complicated questions of agricultural extension, aggregating demand, product to market, and product to manufacturing companies who are doing processing and value-added manufacturing.
So let's talk a little bit about regulation. You've spoken about licensing, but the regulatory framework has really been a headache for the players in the sector. You could argue that, in fact, the industry is literally being held back by regulation. What do you think is the most urgent thing to do to unlock this industry? So what do we need to do as in like yesterday if we are to talk about, as you said, unblocking those blockages?
I think there are important amendments to existing legislation which have to be considered, and I will make proposals in that regard. In the hemp industry, as one example, the percentage of THC which is allowed in hemp plants is ridiculously low. In fact, testing has shown that you can't grow hemp outside in African climatic conditions and get a below, significantly below 1% THC content. And so there are a host of regulatory amendments which are required, and I am certainly applying my mind to those and engaging with the departments to try and ensure that we lower the regulatory barriers. Another example might be a license to produce cannabis has to be, if you wish to export, you've got to apply for an export license for every batch of exports, which takes a long time. And there are perhaps coherent reasons why that needs to be done, because our commitment to international collaboration with respect to international laws governing drugs requires that that is tracked and traced. But, you know, many countries have begun to dispense with over-regulation and sometimes perhaps over-robust commitments to international conventions in favor of, you know, a more flexible approach, lowering the barriers to entry. It's complicated, though, Clement. We must be very careful not to make missteps. On the one hand, we need investment in large industrial or agro-industrial sites of production. At the same time, if we do that in a way which doesn't take into account black small-scale farmers and the support that they are required, then we might, you know, have unintended consequences and not address the fundamental issue which we are seeking to address, which is rural poverty and economic activity. So whilst there's a need for haste and urgency, we need to also be really careful not to make policy and regulatory missteps, and it's difficult to claw those missteps back.
But my goodness, it's taken so long. I want us to talk about the cannabis bill now that is before Parliament. It's taken so long for government to acknowledge cannabis as a major contributor to our economy, and it's taken even longer to formulate this cannabis master plan. And you could argue the slow pace in developing the laws to support legal this industry legally is really getting us to really miss out on a lot. Just help us understand what this bill before Parliament actually does, the Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill. What's allowed and what's not allowed according to this bill and according to the Cannabis Master Plan?
I'm not a legal expert, and so I want to give that proviso. My own view on the matter is that the Private Purposes Bill is addressing a constitutional court decision which allows for private use.
Yes.
And so I haven't seen the final iteration of the Private Purposes Bill, but I think there's a danger of conflating what a Private Purposes Bill should be doing and a strategy and a regulatory and legislative regime to commercialize hemp and cannabis. And I think the two have become conflated.
But don't they both need to be at sync? I mean, you need the regulations that will allow this business to flourish, right?
Absolutely. They need to be in sync.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, for one reason and another, the development of an evidence-based regulatory and legislative environment has fallen behind the Private Purposes Bill. So yes, they do need to be in sync. And there are a lot of overlapping issues. There is, you know, the whole issue, which is highly contentious, of reparation. How do you expunge the criminal records? And how do you have, you know, some kind of process of reparation, including for those who were you know, convicted and sentenced for sometimes minor activities which are no longer criminal. And there are a host of related issues. You know, the burden on the criminal justice system for addressing these petty crimes is something that probably should be removed to free up the court and criminal justice system to address more serious criminality. And so, you know, even that is a complex problem. If you speak to people in the criminal justice system, they have a particular view, which is zero tolerance to all criminal activity, including even the sale of cannabis in small quantities. And so this is not an easy sector. It's a very complicated sector. We've got to get coherence and alignment across government departments, working closely with the private sector and rural communities. And whilst urgency is the key, we must be very careful not to make missteps.
Absolutely. And that's why you've been hired as a consultant, Garth. So I'm hoping really that this bill is going to be passed very soon so that we start really moving. Let's talk about just the economic opportunities. Government in this cannabis master plan estimates that the industry is worth about 28 or so billion rand and could create over 10,000 jobs across the sector. What opportunities do you think unlocking this sector produce, even for those small-scale farmers? And how do we ensure that those efforts to regulate the sector don't jeopardize the economic interests of those rural communities that are already involved in cultivating the crop?
So there are a host of issues. With respect to the last part of your question, we have to develop a regulatory regime which enables the regulation of the illicit economy. If we have a regulatory regime which is very high hurdles, why would a rural small-scale farmer move from the illicit economy into a regulated economy if he has to pay whatever huge amount for a license, put up fences, have a track and trace system, and so on and so forth? So developing a strategy which brings the illicit economy into a regulated economy is the first part of the problem. I'm convinced that there are enormous opportunities. There are enormous opportunities, not just in relation to the demand for adult use, but into, as everybody knows, medicinal cannabis, wellness products, cosmetics, food, and, you know, innumerable applications of cannabis and hemp products as an alternative to plastic. Bear in mind that the hemp and cannabis plant, which is essentially the same plant with different physical and genetic characteristics and properties, that the seeds can be used for oil. The flowers can be used for CBD, CBG, THC, the leaves, the plant matter can be used for animal feedstock. The herd and the bast in the stalks can be used for composite materials. In fact, the C-Class Mercedes-Benz assembled in East London has panels which are made out of hemp as an example. There are companies that have already set up that are using building material, bricks, cladding, which is made out of hemp. The bioproducts can be used for a wide range of food. And so there are enormous opportunities. What we have to think about very carefully, Clement, is do we simply want to be a primary producer? And no, we don't. All around the world, countries are getting into primary production. We've got to look at what is a competitive strategy for South Africa. We can't play across all of the value chain. Where are our competitive capabilities? Where are the competitive opportunities? And how do we deploy the policy levers in support of where we want to build capabilities? And that's a complex piece of work because it needs to be evidence-based. You need to work very carefully and closely with the private sector. processing is easy, but then you relatively easy, but you need a demand analysis. Where are you going to sell this processed oil to? Yeah. The issues of standards, compulsory regulations, phytosanitary requirements in many export markets, and other destinations. By the way, use standards and phytosanitary and other regulations as what are called non-tariff barriers. Mm. So they limit imports into their markets in the interests of their own production capabilities. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we have to do is set up a standards and conformity assessment regime. What are the standards that we need that will meet international regulations? And how do we set up a testing regime, not just for the clinical processes, which is already in place, but for all the other products? Yeah. If we're making bricks, are we sure it's to the required standards so the building doesn't catch a light or the bricks aren't robust enough to last for whatever length of time is required? Yeah. So it's a complex piece of work, and it's going to require very careful calibration.
Yeah, careful, but also some urgent movements as well. We need to really start realizing that the potential of this industry. Coming up after the latest in Eyewitness News headlines, I'm going to take your calls on 011-883-0702. You can join the conversation on the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. How does government balance implementing these laws that will allow the industry to flourish while ensuring that the very same laws are actually not being abused? That's something that I want us to talk about. And our thinking needs to shift as well. I mean, we're talking here about a once illegal resource, right, that is being brought into the formal economy. And there needs to be a shift, I think, that is required in the perception, right? The public needs to see the social, healthcare, and economic benefits of cannabis. So where do we even start with changing that perception? And is it even changing? Has your perception on cannabis changed? It's 10:31.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
7:02. Let's walk the talk.
It's 24 minutes before 11 o'clock. We are talking about the cannabis industry. Are we really doing all we can? And is government urgently doing all it can to realize the potential of this industry? Because things have been moving a little slow. And the sooner really we start with the formal industrial hemp and cannabis industry, the better. There are many countries that have already advanced and they've moved with industrialization of cannabis, and we need to start moving quickly. I want to go to your calls now on 011-883-0702. I'll take your WhatsApp voice notes as well on 072-702-1702. Let's start with Kyle Brocklebank, who's given us a call, who's actually the CEO of THC Africa. Kyle, thank you for calling in. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Very well, thank you. A little bit chilly up here in Joburg, but we are surviving.
So what's been your experience as the CEO of THC Africa, Kyle? Any bottlenecks, especially when it comes to regulation?
Look, around the cannabis framework in South Africa at the present moment in time, there's a lot of bottlenecks. We have experienced a number of them along the line with SAPRA, along the line with the South African Pharmaceutical Council. And, you know, being where we are, being able to be the first dispensary in Africa to dispense cannabis via the Section 21 process that we've built through the Prof. Tobias program, it's made things really tough to actually tie everything together, but we have managed to do it. There is a way to systematically manage it and do it. So not to say that everybody is doing everything that they can, but there is some of us who is doing as much as we possibly can to tie it all together. Yeah. Yes.
And I know that you guys have these educational programs that you offer on cannabis infrastructure.
That is correct. So look, what we realized that putting all of this together, it's time consuming, it's extremely costly, and the market regulations around it are very tough. But what we've come to understand is that the education behind cannabis is not there. And what we have is we are able to offer an NQF level 4 program, which is like a matric equivalent in medical cannabis production, and we offer practical time along with dispensary action time, coming to our pharmacy to understand it, so that you can understand really where cannabis is, what the plant is.
Mm.
And on a larger scale, we've been in discussions with the large sugarcane corporation to start getting into hemp, to start pushing this in that direction. You know, once everybody is certified to understand cannabis, can we then grow the market?
Yeah, absolutely. Those educational programs are really important. Kyle, thank you for calling in, man. Kyle Brocklebank is the CEO of THC Africa. It's actually the first legal cannabis pharmacy in South Africa. Garth, any reflections on Kyle? I mean, they're speaking about these educational programs they offer, because he says one of the most important things is for people to actually understand.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for the call, Kyle. My own view is that notwithstanding the weaknesses in the regulatory framework from the side of government, the private sector has done very well, and private sector dynamism is evident both in relation to primary production, processing, training, identifying the opportunities, export, domestic, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I have to do is talk to the existing investors, the companies that have developed expertise and intellectual property, because we've got to learn the lessons of what has already been done and work very closely with the private sector to grow the industry across the value chain. We obviously have to do that, as I keep repeating, very mindful of the fact that we have to give a voice to the voiceless, the indigenous knowledge, the small-scale traditional growers, and ensure that as we grow the sector with significant industrial financing, expertise, investment in large-scale enterprises, that we find a way to ensure that those communities are not excluded, because they are important matters of principle. And we've got to address issues of rural poverty, the lack of economic opportunities in rural areas. This is an absolute crying need to address those issues. And if we don't address them, then the rest of our economic effort might be in jeopardy, apart from the absolute need to address those communities who have suffered terrible historical injustices. And so I'm very grateful for that call, and I invite people to contact me. I'm not a guru. I've got to listen to communities. I've got to listen to indigenous communities.
Yeah.
I've got to listen to the private sector. Mm. And we've got to do this together. This
Absolutely.
Is not about some clever dude who comes to the table with some bright ideas.
Yeah.
It's got to be done together.
We all need to sit on the table. Let's take some more calls. Obi, you're calling us from Centurion. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Sharp. How's it going?
Good, good, good. I just want to ask from the gentleman, because I hear that he speaks about the regulations, and that I've been in the cannabis industry for 6 years now. My company does help with registrations in terms of your licenses and your hemp permits.
Mm.
We've been struggling with the regulations. Now I think we are going for the 3rd year, especially from the Department of Justice.
Mm.
And I just want to find out, because of his concern about the small-scale farmers, and his concern about people who are trying to grow. I mean, you look at the first license, that is your cultivation license, that is 25,000 rand.
Sure.
You look at your import and export license, that is 15,000 rand. There's another license for trading as well, that is 15,000 rand. For a person who's just starting and who doesn't have that money, how does your department help them? Because even if you go and apply for those licenses, SAPRA wants an electric fence, they want your storage area, they want your They want two cameras, they want a security company, not even one person, they want a company there, which you are talking about a minimum of 2 million rands of the structure, and which they can even come and tell you that you do not qualify to have a license. I mean, who's got 2 million under their mattresses at this day and age that they don't know what to do with them?
You're very naughty. No, but great contribution there, Obi. I mean, my goodness, I didn't even know that. I mean, electric fence, storage area, security cameras, how much is that costing? Then on top of the license and permits, the cultivation license, import license, the trading issue. Thank you for raising that, Obi. Garth, I imagine these are some of the things you've got to bring all of the people who sit with you on the table to say, this we need to fix. It doesn't make sense that this is the amount of money you need to pay before you can participate in this industry.
Absolutely. Across all sectors, not just hemp and cannabis, we've got to look at the red tape and regulatory barriers to entry. We need to be very careful not to set up an industry where the barriers to entry are so high that only large industrial companies with deep pockets can get into the game. Inclusivity is absolutely critical for all the good reasons we know about in South Africa. But it's complex. Obviously, we'll be meeting SAPRA and other regulatory agencies now that I've got on top of the issues. They're complex questions related to access to cannabis. And the entry of that cannabis into an illicit market. I'm not an expert on legal and issues involved with the Department of Justice and safety and security and so on and so forth. But so the key question will be, how do we lower the barriers to entry to support small-scale farmers and others at the same time as ensuring that issues of public health and wellness are addressed.
How soon,
that's not an easy issue.
But how soon do we need to do that, Garth? So on your estimation, I mean, Obi has been in the industry for about 6 years, and this has been his experience. And if there are new entrants who are interested in getting into the market, they're not going to be able to participate because there's so much that's required of them. So from your own preliminary assessment, and I know things can change, how soon can we expect these laws to be relaxed so that it's much easier not only to enter, but to do this business while, of course, being very cautious that we look at the illicit market and issues around public health?
I would be really, because I don't have decision-making powers, it would be lovely to go into government and bang a few heads and get policy alignment and lower these barriers to entry overnight. I'm a consultant. I'm going to orchestrate the process and try and get urgent action across government departments. Putting a timeline to it is something that I might regret, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah, please do tell them that you hired me to help you unlock the country's cannabis industry. If you're not acting urgently, I'm out. Maybe they'll do something then. George in Benoni, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. First of all, let me just congratulate the gentleman for his candor. He's open, he's honest, he's not over-promising. That's one of the problems. I mean, one of the challenges we have, and not only South Africa, or how shall I say, so-called third world countries, is how TK traditional knowledge has been usurped by developed countries. One of the biggest advantages South Africa has in terms of traditional knowledge is that, and from a marketing perspective, nothing takes away what is called, in terms of rules of origin, your ability to put forward in your marketing promotion spiel the indigenous knowledge that has come over years. Nothing beats that. Because if you come up in terms of processing and all the other things you're talking about, add-ons and beneficiation, every country can do those things with cannabis. But nobody can take away from you issues relating to traditional knowledge. And this is where SPS is coming to play, phytosanitary requirements, because you can use them effectively as non-tariff barriers, or what is called NTBs, which is what other countries are doing. South Africa has failed dismally across many fronts because their lack of using their advantages in terms of rules of origin, geographic notation. That has been the biggest challenge. In other words, we lack the marketing finesse that countries that are adept at using that have done. We failed. And my knowledge of WTO has always shown how one of the Achilles heels is marketing and using the WTO agreements to our best advantage.
Yeah.
Finished.
That's it. Absolutely. Yeah. Great contribution there, George. And we often wake up too late to that, right? Let's say Chris in Bedford View now. Chris, good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is Chris Lowe. How's it going?
Hi, Chris. Good. How's it?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for the show. And just thank you for having me on the show as well. So you mentioned the misconception of CBD or the cannabis products. So I currently, as with my partner, we actually run a CBD-based pet product range.
Yeah.
And we've gone to many night markets, and people have looked at this and have just turned up their nose at it because there's still the connotation of being illegal, or that's it's not good for the dogs. And we in a couple of pet stores as well, and the products are that's moving slowly. So there's definitely a need for education of what cannabis can bring to the party.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, got you in Bedford View. Garth, where do we start with that education? I said earlier that we're talking about a once illegal resource that is being brought into the formal economy, and you need a shift, right? There's a shift that is required in perception. The public needs to see the not just social healthcare but economic benefits of cannabis as well. Do you think that perception has been shifting, or more work still needs to be done?
I think the perception has been shifting almost spontaneously, but I have no question of the fact that as we develop an appropriate policy, legislative framework and plan to urgently develop the sector, a public education and advocacy campaign is absolutely central. Yeah. Government doesn't, unfortunately, in my view, do very well at that in that space. But we have to look at that very, very seriously. I couldn't agree, secondly, more with the caller, and forgive me, I just didn't catch his name, in relation to Indigenous knowledge. The Council for Scientific and Industrial Research and the Department of Science and Industry is working with Indigenous knowledge communities and practitioners. This is a competitive advantage that we have, and we've got to look at it very carefully. There has been, very bad behavior in relation to stealing, if that's the right word, Indigenous knowledge, our land race. And so the geographic indicators and the other measures that we can use for securing our land race systems is hugely important, and to use the global multilateral institutions to do so is going to be very important. Otherwise, we'll find, for example, we import seeds get dispersed, and they destroy our landrace systems simply because they planted close to imported to landrace crop production. So to give you an example of the kind of complexity, we need zoning regulations. You can't just plant a landrace system seed next to an imported seed because you'll get cross fertilization. And so again, those are complex issues. We have to do them urgently and in a collaborative fashion so that we ensure that this gets done. if we get involved in what I call analysis paralysis, which is an endless process of policy and regulatory reform without interim measures and getting plants in the ground and production happening and learning by doing, yeah, we're making a very big mistake.
And already
mistake.
We are running behind.
Yeah.
I mean, we are already behind. So the sooner we start in the interim, the better. Metal, you're calling us from Lanseria. Good morning. Thank you for your patience in holding.
Good morning, Clement. Yes, man, thank you so much for having Garth Strachan on the show. I am the MD of Fields of Green for All, the remaining half of the Dacha couple. We sued the South African government in 2010, and I don't have enough time to say everything I want to say, but the one thing that I want to bring to your attention is that Fields of Green for All, in April 2020, we published our manifesto,
yeah,
which is a clear and concise outline to how constitutional regulations can work.
Mm.
And that is centered around a hub, which is a cooperative system, and cannabis private social clubs. But now, the Fields of Green for All deals with every single one of the issues that you have brought up this morning, from IKS to SAPRA and their exclusivity to rural communities, which are not only in the Eastern Cape. I just came back from Limpopo. They have their own land race up there. They've got enormous cannabis communities up there.
Mm.
But all of that aside, we've discussed it this morning. The main thing, the elephant in the room that is not being brought up, is the South African police services. They are still arresting people,
yes,
stealing their cannabis. Mm. They a lot of the time they don't arrest people. They go into their homes and their businesses, they simply confiscate, and that person is never given a chance to come in front of a magistrate. If they are brought in front of a magistrate, 99% of the time, those cases get thrown out. But that person has spent usually a weekend in the stinking police cells. They've been traumatized by the police. They've had all of their stock stolen. So we want the South African Police Service and cannabis to be separated completely. And this is something that I'm going to be discussing very soon with Mr. Strachan.
But yeah, yeah. No, let's do that. And I'm glad that Garth has actually said he wants to sit down with people like you, Metal, so that you can have the discussion. So very important, because even after that Constitutional Court's judgment, there is still no proper clarity, really. There are some police officers, as Metal says, who are still arresting people, right? The Constitutional Court says the possession, the cultivation of cannabis in private dwellings was not illegal and should be allowed in South Africa. But you still have police not really having the clarity on how to implement that and what the quantities are, etc. So, Metal, thank you for raising that. Quickly, David and Centurion, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for the very interesting topic. I think maybe my point is more towards the THC side of cannabis, given that it's more potent with regards to health benefits. And, you know, what measures will be present as we are moving towards trying to legalize the whole of the cannabis industry, measures to standardize cannabis? Because I think there's always been a problem, which is giving cannabis a bad name, that sometimes you buy something off of a shelf and you hardly ever know what is contained inside there, because I think it's quite a, you know, esoteric, you know, topic, this cannabis, you know, given that there's so many health risks that are involved. So I think there's agencies in Europe and some other countries that are in the process of standardizing it, because half of the variants that are in the market, they are not really what it is that is on the label. So you face a risk of buying something either for medicinal purposes or for other reasons, and only to find that it's not really, either it's watered down or it's mostly, you know, CBD, and it does not have enough THC content, which is what mostly what people want.
Yes, absolutely. David, thank you for raising that. And Garth, that's touches on just that balance with the public health and safety aspect of it, and just making sure the products are also standardized. We've got just under 30 seconds, Garth. Your last words?
Yes. Thank you to Myrtle. Mm. And I have engaged with Myrtle and in conferences, and will do so bilaterally as soon as possible. Mm. I just want to pay tribute to the pioneers like Myrtle and others who sometimes with very little gain at all have been out there advocating and working for the development of the sector. And David, just to say, I did mention earlier, a standards and conformity assessment regime is absolutely critical. Mm. We can't open ourselves up to fraudulent behaviors in relation to processed products. I really lastly want to thank you, Clement, and 702. Mm. What our process has to be is to engage with communities and practitioners and private sector companies. I've got a lot to learn from them, so I'm very grateful for the opportunity.
Thank you so much for making time. Garth Strachan.